Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Pesachim, Daf Yud. Yesterday, we started the new Mishnah, the second Mishnah of Pesachim, first perek of Pesachim, where the Mishnah talked about Chazaka and Safek. When you check your house now has a Cheskas Baduk. It's now assumed, it's presumed to be checked, and at that point in time, you can breathe easy. You can go to sleep that night, and you can enjoy yourself for just a little bit. The reason why is because we have this principle of Chazaka. Chazaka tells us that unless I know otherwise, I assume everything's okay. The Mishnah says you don't need to concern yourself. You don't need to think as you go to bed that night, maybe a rodent took chametz from one person's house and brought it to my house. The Mishnah says you don't need to worry about that because we have this principle called Chazaka. What is clear from the Mishnah, or at least seems clear from the Mishnah, is that if I actually saw a rodent take chametz from one person's house into my house, so my house loses that status of being muchzak. To which the Gemara wonders, why should it lose the status of chazaka? Why not make the reasonable suggestion, guess, that maybe the rodent not only brought chametz into my house, but the rodent ate the chametz as well? We have a Mishnah in Olos that talks about how rodents go and eat things. So the Gemara made a couple of distinctions. Maybe there's a difference between the case in Olos, where we're talking about the eating of meat, versus our discussion over here, where we're talking about the eating of bread. That was one possibility. And then the Gemara goes on to point out that there's a fundamental difference. Our case over here in Pesachim, once you see a rodent bringing chametz into your house, so now we have a vadai, meaning we now know unequivocally that there's chametz in your house, and now we're trying to guess whether or not the chametz is no longer there or not. So in other words, the principle of ain suffik motzi midei vadai, we don't have this idea where suffik removes the vadai. I can't guess, I can't do any guesswork and suggest something when I know for sure that there was chametz in the house. And then the Gemara went on to discuss this principle of ain suffik motzi midei vadai. We did it in the context of a couple of mishnayos throughout Shas. We did it in the context of a person who left over fruit. He just collected the fruit and then he died, and we don't know whether or not Trumas and Maestros were taken off. We assume it was. So the Gemara says, how can we assume that? We have the principle of Ein Safek Motzi Midei Vadai, and the Gemara gave a couple of explanations of why we can assume that. Another example the Gemara gave, we did yesterday, was where a woman, a Shifcha, gave birth and she miscarried, and that which came out of her, the discharge that came out of her, went into a pit, not knowing exactly what it is. And a Kohen looks over the side of the pit to see whether or not it was a Zachar, was a Nekeva. And this Kohen then went to the Chachamim, asked about his own status of Tum and Tahara. And the Chachamim said to him, you're fine, you're Tahor. And again, how can that be? Ain Safik Motzi Midei Vadai. And again, the Gemara gave a couple of answers in terms of why it is this Kohen is fine. That is a synopsis of what we saw yesterday on Daf Tes. We're continuing the Gemara today. We're on Daf Yud. I'm just going to take a quick step backwards. Those last lines of the Gemara I read yesterday, I read under duress. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to reread the Gemara right after the parentheses in the Gemara, right in the middle of the Amud on Testament Beis. And we're going to finish up this discussion. The Gemara says, really, is that really not a concern that that a rodent is not going to take bread and drag it into my house? However, we're going to learn in a Mishnah. We're going to learn this Mishnah. It's coming up on Yud Amud Beis, but we're going to do it tomorrow. We're going to do this Mishnah tomorrow. Let's say you want to leave breakfast over for the next morning, meaning you did your bedikah on the night of the 14th, and after having done the bedikah, you don't want to get rid of all your chametz because you want to have breakfast tomorrow morning, and you'd like it if your breakfast tomorrow morning would be chametz. So that's no problem. The Mishnah says, yenichenu b'tzina, put it away somewhere where it's safe. Shalo yeitzarech bedikah acharav, because if you don't put it away somewhere safe, you're going to have to do bedikah all over again tomorrow morning. Now, what does it sound like? It sounds like from that Mishnah that if I just leave my chametz out in the open, that's it. I compromised my house. My house is no longer becheskas baduk, because what happened over the course of the night, you know, rodents came in, took chametz and started spreading it out, distributing it out throughout the house. That's what it sounds like from the Mishnah on Yud Amud Beis. So the Gemara now is asking a really simple question. Our Mishnah says, don't worry, stop worrying. Once you check your house, so there's no longer a chashash that rodents are running around with your chametz, or somebody else's chametz taking your house. Meanwhile, this Mishnah over here, which is coming up on tomorrow's daf, makes it sound like, no, you need to worry. In fact, the Mishnah says, once you finish your bedika, whatever you do with your leftover chametz for tomorrow morning, hide it. So why do you have to hide it? So Amar Abaye Lokasha Haba Arbasar Haba Shloshasar. So the Gemara starts off by making the following distinction. Well, 13th day of Nisan versus 14th day of Nisan. V'shlosh asar d'shchiach rifta b'kulabate lo mitzana. Look, on the 13th day of Nisan, chametz is aplenty. Chametz is everywhere. And the rodents know that, and they know they don't have to scrounge around for chametz. However, bar basar, d'lo shchicha rifta, on the 14th day of Nisan, where there's not a lot of bread around, b'kulabate mitzane. And because there's not bread around, so therefore the rodents are going to scrounge around and start scavenging for chametz and whatever they can get their hands on, so they're going to get their hands on. Okay, so this is the Gemara's suggested explanation in terms of how you see the difference between our Mishnah and Daf Tes versus the Mishnah coming up on Yud Amud Beis. Good. What an answer. And the Gemara notes, that's some answer. Amar Rava v'chichulda neviyahi. Really? The rodent knows the difference between the 13th day of Nisan and the 14th day of Nisan. Rodent's checking his calendar, looking exactly at not only the date of the month, but also the chulda knows exactly what the supply and demand is of the chametz, meaning it seems to be impossible. Everyone, as I mentioned yesterday, everyone's following the double entendre of the Gemara's answer, of the Gemara's question over here, v'chichulda neviyahi. Gemara Megillah says that there are seven neviyos, there are seven prophets who were women. One of them was Chulda. So, okay, it's a play on words over here. Anyway, v'chichulda nevi'i, di'yada de'ha'ina ve'esa v'lo'ape ad la'orta u'misharim matmara. Hard to imagine. That really the rodents know. Today's Erev Pesach. No bread's going to be baked today. Nothing's going to be happening until tonight. Where they're going to make matzah. Hard to imagine. Ella amarava mash meshayer yinichena b'tzina shematito cholde b'fanenu v'yitzarech b'dika acharav. So the Gemara gives a much simpler answer, and that is the following. Look, after you do your bedik on the 14th day, on the night of the 14th, you're going to put away whatever chametz you want for the next morning. Put away somewhere safe. Why? Because if not because I'm worried, but if I actually see a rodent take the chametz and move it around the house, so then I have to do bedik all over again. That's all the Mishnah means on Daf Yud Amud Beis. It's a much easier way to solve the dilemma. Tanya Kavase de Rava, and in fact, the Gemara then quotes a Braisa, exactly as Rava suggested. So let's say you do a bedika on the night of the 14th, but you don't want to get rid of all your chametz. You want to eat some next morning. So what do you do? That's the braisa. That's what we wanted to see. We're not worried that the chulda is going to take it, but if we see him take it, the eitzarch bedika acharav, then we're going to have a problem. Then we're going to have to do a bedika immediately afterwards. Okay. Sorry, what? Okay, so you're getting ready for Daf Yud. They get ready for Daf Yud. Okay, you're your thought process is on the right path. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Okay, so that's suggestion number one. So again, no worries. Meaning, as far as chashash is concerned, there's no reason to be choshesh. Our house is checked. It has a chazak of being baduk. We're good. If we see a rodent take bread and move it around the house, so then we have problems. But otherwise, there's nothing to worry about. That is all answer number one of the Gemara. Answer number two, Rav Mari Amar, Gzeres Shema Yaniach Esav Yimtza Teisha. Well, maybe the problem is as follows. You go to bed that night, you put away 10 loaves of bread. For the next morning, you wake up the next morning, and how much do you find? You find 9 loaves of bread. One's gone. All right, same basic idea. In other words, it's not that I'm worried that there's a problem. I know there's a problem because I put away 10, and now I wake up in the morning, I find 9. And so I now know there's a problem. It's basically the same type of answer. Maybe you can find some sort of distinction between the previous Rav's answer and Rav Mari's answer, but it's basically the same point. Don't be confused, by the way. The Gemara here is not talking to the idea that when you do a bedikah on the night of the 14th, you lay out 10 loaves of bread. Right? That's a minug. That's a custom. There's no mention of that in the Gemara that we're supposed to lay out bread. So some are of the opinion, it's a minug Ashkenaz. Sephardim, do you do that? Do you lay out 10? Yeah, you do. Okay, where'd you get that from? So the minhag Ashkenaz is to lay out 10 loaves of bread. It's brought down the Ramah, and by the way, even amongst the Ashkenazim, it's controversial. Not everyone agrees to the opinion of the Ramah that you should do that. If I'm not mistaken, I think the Taz says you should not do that. Anyway, so but that's a minhag. Our Gemara over here just simply means that going to bed at night, I put out 10 loaves of bread, not for the bedika, so that tomorrow morning I'm going to have breakfast. And what happens is, instead of finding 10 loaves of bread, the next morning I find 9. So now I know there's a problem, so that's what the Gemara is talking about. Okay, Adkan. Now, of course, not Adkan, meaning we're about to start today's daf, but in other words, that now addresses the basic pshat in our Mishnah. Good, so we have this idea of chazaka in our Mishnah. Once the house is checked, it has a cheskas baduk, and unless I know otherwise, not guess otherwise, but unless I know otherwise, my house is given a stamp and a seal of approval, and I'm good to go in terms of bedikas chametz. From this point going forward, the Gemara is going to ask a whole series of questions, one upon another, meaning at what point do I now generate enough concern so that my house no longer has the enjoyment of cheskas beduka. The Gemara is going to really just reel off, I didn't count, it's over a dozen, different questions in terms of when do we sound off the alarms. Let's just go one by one in the Gemara. Some of these are more complex than others. In other words, we're really going to get into the world of Suffolk. Meaning if you've been around long enough in the daf, you'll know Suffolk is a topic which the Gemara covers again and again. We have Suffolk, we have Sfeik, Sfeika, and a number of permutations of these ideas of Sfeikos. So here we begin now a detailed discussion about a number of different Suffolk scenarios. We start off with the following scenario. I have 9 piles of matzah and 1 pile of chametz. Okay? And along comes an achbar, a rodent, and he takes one of the piles. And I do not know what he took. So in other words, let's deal with our simple statistics. Statistically speaking, 90% chance, assuming everything else is equal, 90% chance that he took matzah, this achbar, 10% chance that he took chametz. So he then, whatever he took in his mouth, he goes into my house, he runs into my house. So what did he take into my house, chametz or matzah? So if I'm going with simple statistics, so it sounds like we have a situation over here of 90 versus 10, 90% versus 10%. Okay, now, Before we arrive at any conclusion, we have to be more informed. So let us get more informed. Hainu teishachanios, the Gemara says, I'm sorry, what just happened? Hainu teishachanios. So that is analogous to the case of the 9 stores. Okay? If you don't know the case of the 9 stores, stay tuned. We're going to learn it together in just a moment. Piresh, however, if this rodent didn't take one of the piles of either matzah or chametz, but rather one of the piles separated on its own. Hard to imagine exactly how this happens, but right now let's just get familiar with the terminology. If one of the piles separated on its own, this is what's called piresh, the asa achbar v'shakal, and along comes a rodent and takes from this, whatever it is, bread or chametz, we don't know, hainu seifa, that is the end of the case of the 9 stores, and in that case, we're going to be lenient. We're going to be makel. Now, if all this is not clear as of yet, so let's first learn together the case of the 9 stores. Did not we learn the Mishnah? It's not a Mishnah, it's a Braisa. Teisha Chaniyo. So we start here with the following. You have 9 stores. Kulan mochrim basar shchuta v'achas mochrim basar nevela. Of these 9 stores, 8 of them are selling shechted meat, otherwise known as kosher meat, and one of them is selling non-kosher meat. V'lakach me'achas mehem ve'eni yodeh me'ezeh mehem lakach. Now you went into one of the stores, but after that, really your memory is a fog. You do not know which store you went into. Now I know you can argue, you can easily argue, well, I never go into the non-kosher store, but leave that argument out of the discussion right now. You really have no recollection whatsoever which store you went into. Right? The probability is that you went into a kosher store, but there is a chance that you went into a non-kosher store. Sfeiko Aser. Interestingly enough, that meat that you're holding in your hand is going to be prohibited. This is now a suffix. The obvious question is, why in the world would that be a suffix? If we're going to go with statistics, we have a statistical probability that you went into a kosher store. Meaning of the 9 stores that were there, 8 of them were kosher, 9 of them were non-kosher. So 8 versus 1, that tells us that rove, that the majority of the stores are kosher. And usually we have a principle that holchinacha rove, that the majority is going to dictate what this meat is. And meanwhile, this Bryce says, the meat you're holding in your hand, even though there's a 1 in 9 chance that I got it from a non-kosher store, it's going to be prohibited. Why should that be? So, if you have not heard of this concept yet, I'm sure for those of you who have been around long enough, you heard of it. For those of you who have not heard of this concept, this is a concept called kavua. We have a principle of kol kavua kemechza amechza dami. That if I have a suffix that's generated from an established place, from a stationary place, so then we have the principle of kol kavua kemechza amechza dami. Now, if you want to try to inject some sort of understanding and rationale and logic into this principle, I wish you a lot of luck. It seems to be just a simple gzeiras hakasuv. It seems to be just simple, this is it, this is the law. The Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses this in more detail. All right, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, if I remember correctly, dealt with a scenario where I threw a stone into a pile, into a group of people, and it hits one, and there was a suffix over there. Okay, let's not get too far off the ardaf. But anyway, this is a principle called kavua. Fine. So, the principle of kavua tells us that if the suffix is generated from stationary items, so then we no longer look at the numbers, meaning even though the numbers are 1 versus 8, 8 versus 1, it's kemechza al mechza dami. It basically levels the playing field, and it now becomes 50-50. Okay. This is the principle of kavua. However, so when the rodent goes and he grabs one of the piles, I have 9 piles of matzah, 1 pile of chametz. The rodent took one of the piles. I don't know which one he took, but he took one of them. And he runs into the house with that pile. So now, what do we say? Kol kavua kemechza amechza dami. Since he took it from a stationary pile, so therefore now, even though numerically, statistically, it sounds like we should be okay, but because he took it from stationary piles, we have the principle of kavua, and kol kavua kemechza amechza dami. Good. Then, let's move on to the next part of the discussion. What if the rodent didn't take it from a pile, but rather, however, let's say one of the piles separated off. Now, again, exactly what this means, hard to say. Meaning, let's say somebody picked up one of the piles and moved it. So now it's no longer stationary, it's no longer kavua, and he walks away with it. Now we can let statistics be our guide. Meaning now we have the regular principle of rov. The regular principle of rov tells us that the probability is it comes from matzah and not from chametz, and therefore holchinach rov. Therefore we're going to follow the majority, and that which went into the house is not chametz, but rather it's matzah. The house is not going to require a new bedika. Okay. Let's deal with a very basic issue over here before we go on in the Gemara. What did we just learn? We learned about this principle of kavua versus piresh. If the suffix comes from a stationary item, it's always leveled off at 50-50. If it comes from something which is in motion, so then holchin acharov, then we follow the majority. Okay. Cool. Let's assume the worst case scenario. Meaning, let's assume kavua. So what does kavua tell us? Kavua tells us that it's 50-50. That means, let's try to isolate the issue over here. The rodent picked up, it's either chametz or matzah, we don't know. He walked into the house with it. The house was checked already. Does the house need to be checked again? So the Gemara says yes. What's the worst case scenario? Worst case scenario is it's a suffix, meaning kol kavua kemechza amechza dami. So in other words, basically what the Gemara is telling us is that when the rodent walks into the house with maybe chametz, 50-50, I nevertheless have to do a bedika again. Now, the mitzvah bedika chametz, what kind of mitzvah is that? Mitzvah d'arais or mitzvah d'rabanan? It's a mitzvah d'rabanan. Right? Mid d'arais, all you need to do is bittul and then you're satisfied. So what is strange of this discussion, and by the way, this question is just going to keep repeating itself again and again. So it's good just to hear it now. What's strange now from this Gemara is that even under the principle of kavua, and even if it's a suffix, we're really talking about a suffix on a din d'rabanan, not a din d'arais. It sounds like from the Gemara, you're going to have to do bedika again. Bedika is just the Rabbanan. So because I have a suffix, now I'm going to have to redo the bedika again? Okay. So it's just, and the Rishonim are bothered by this question, meaning I didn't invent the wheel over here. This is a question that's asked by Rishonim again and again throughout this whole discussion. So why should it be that even if it's a suffix, and even if it's 50-50, I'm going to have to do bedika again? Bedika is only a din d'rabbanan, it's not a din d'araisa. Okay.
Maybe to
Okay, right. So, right, part of the answer may be, that Dan, it's an excellent thought, is that this is not just a standalone din derabanan. It's a din derabanan attached to a din daraisa. Because without the bedikah, it could be that I'm going to end up owning chametz, and right. All right, so you have to think something in those terms, because bedikah by itself, and the Gemara says it, Gemara's going to say in just a moment as well, bedikah by itself is just a din derabanan. So why should a suffix have to have us do a din derabanan again? So that's something in general you have to think about over the course of this discussion. We're coming up to Sfeik Sveika. That's coming up later in the Gemara. Shnei Tzibur in the Gemara gives us now case number two. Echad shel matzah ve'echad shel chametz v'lifneim shnei batim echad baduk ve'echad she'eino baduk. Okay, again, these scenarios, a lot of these scenarios are improbable, but we're dealing with the concept that comes out from these scenarios. I have two piles. One is chametz and the other pile is matzah. I have two houses. One house has been checked and one house has not been checked. And v'astu shnei achbarim ve'echad shekel matzah ve'echad shekel chametz. One achbar took matzah, the other achbar preferred chametz, and they ran into the houses. Here's what I do not know. I do not know the paths of the mice. Remember those children books where you have like those convoluted lines going from one point to another, and you got to figure out like who went where? So here, I know one mouse went with the chametz into one house. I know that another mouse went with matzah into the other house. I know one house was examined, and I know one house was not examined. So, v'lo yadin hai lahai ayo v'hai lahai ayo. So, can I assume the best or do I have to assume the worst? What's the best? Best would be that the mouse with matzah went into the examined house. And the mouse with chametz went into the unexamined house. That would be the best case scenario. The worst case scenario would be the opposite. That mouse with matzah went into the unexamined house. And the mouse with chametz went into the examined house. That would be the worst. So what do I assume? So the Gemara says, assume the best. Hainu shtei kupos. You know what it's analogous to? It's analogous to the case of the two barrels, two boxes. Dinan shtei kupos achas shechul ma'achas shel truma. I have two boxes. One of them is filled with chul and the other one's filled with truma. V'lifneim shnei saim achas shechul ma'achas shel truma. And in front of these two boxes, I have both truma and chulin. V'naflu elu l'soch elu mutarin. And now somebody dumped the chulin and the truma into the boxes. And again, the dilemma over here is the same exact dilemma. I don't know whether the chulin went into the chulin box or the chulin went into the truma box. If the truma went into the truma box or the truma went into the chulin box, obviously it's going to create a serious problem. Because if the truma fell into the chulin box, so that chulin is no longer chulin. That is now going to be a mixture of chulin and truma, otherwise known as dimua, and can only be eaten by the kohanim. So what do I assume? So she'ani omer chulin l'soch chulin naflu u'truma l'soch truma nafla. So my assumption is that the chulin went into the chulin, truma went into the truma. Now again, how can I make such an assumption? I don't know. We're guessing over here. So based on guesswork, we're allowed to assume chulin went into chulin and truma went into truma. So the Gemara gives away the answer. How am I allowed to assume that? Amar de Arminan Sha'ani Omer. When do I have the right to make this kind of prognostication? B'truma derabanan. That's only when the truma in question is a truma derabanan. In other words, I can only assume this to be so when the risk is an iser derabanan. So then I could be makel. This is what's called talia, where I could basically assign that the chulin went into the chulin and the truma went into truma. But that's only if the truma is a truma derabanan. But had it been truma daraisa, I would not be allowed to make such an assumption. Here, what are we talking about? We're talking about chametz. Chametz is not a din derabanan. Chametz is an issa daraisa. Mi amrinan. So are we allowed to say that? I saw a road and pick up chametz. I saw a second road and pick up matzah. They go into two houses and I can now assign, I don't know who went into whom, but I can guess which one went into which when we're talking about an issa daraisa. And again, the Gemara says, not so fast. Atu bedikas chametz daraisa, derabanan hi. We're not talking, you're focusing on the wrong part of the equation. Chametz is an issa daraisa. Bedika is a din derabanan. Atu bedikas chametz daraisa, derabanan hi. Demid daraisa bibetaba masagile. Second time the Gemara tells us now in the Masechta. That really, minatora, how do I cure my chametz woes? Bittel. All I need to do is just simply nullify, disavow the chametz that's in my house, and now I'm good. So Midar writes that the problem has been solved with Bittul. Now it's just a question of Bidika, which is a din derabanan. So now that I've brought it down to a din derabanan, yeah, I could do Tliya. I can now say that the matzah with chametz went into the checked house, and the matzah with and the rodent with chametz went into the non-checked house. That's what I could do based on the fact that it's not a din d'oraisa, it's rather a din d'rabbanan. Okay. Next, tzibur echad shel chametz v'lafanav beis batim bedukim. I have a pile of chametz, and in front of the pile of chametz, I have two houses. Both of them already been examined. V'asa achber v'shakav alo yadin and ilahai al, ilahai al. So, okay, next question. Rat took one of the piles of chametz. I'm sorry, there's only one pile of chametz, and went into a house. I don't know which house he went into. The known is that he went into one of the houses. The unknown is which house he went into. So what at that point do I say? Let's assume that these homes are owned by two different people. Each one of them now is going to be asking, do I need to do a bedika again? Okay. Hainu shnei shvilin. So the Gemara says this is analogous to the case of the two paths. That non, we learned a Mishnah. Shnei shvilin echatame ve'echatar. Let's say I have two paths. And to walk down these two paths, if you walk down one path, you'll be tahor. There's no tuma on that path. To walk down the other path, there's tuma there. Let's say there's a body buried along the path. Let's say it's buried along crosswise against the path. It's impossible to walk down the path and not to come into contact with tuma. So I walk down two paths. This is halachic Russian roulette, if you will. I walk down two paths. One of them is tar, one's tame. I don't know which path I walk down. V'halach bechaman v'asa taharos. And then after walking down the path, I then dealt with taharos, meaning kalim and food that I assume to be tahor. Uvachaver v'halach b'sheni v'asa taharos. Now, a second person walked down the other path, and he too was also, after having his little spatzir, he too also was dealing with taharos. Now, question becomes the following.
How do you know that you didn't walk down the same path?
Oh, again, we're just, these questions are assuming a certain amount of knowledge.
Because you said that the first one, you don't know which path you went down. So how do you know?
You're right. The case is that we don't know where the tumah is, but we know one went down one path and the other went down the other path. It's just, that's the given of this case. And so now, and they both work with taharos. So now again, independently, if we looked at each person independently, each one of them presents a suffix. However, combined, there's no longer a doubt. We know, again, the givens are, there's tumah on one of the paths. We know that the two of them went down two different paths, so we know collectively one of them is tameh.
We're not
going to
know the person's identification either,
no? Okay, fine. So right, Rashi over here. Rashi over here addresses that. So Rashi assumes that we're talking about Rishus HaRabim. Right, Rashi says that we're assuming it's a Rishus HaRabim. So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mishal Zeb Bifnei Atzma VeZeb Bifnei Atzma Taharin. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda says like this. Let's say they come independent of one another, and each one asks the Rav the Shaila, what's my status? Rav says, well, it's a suffik. Suffik tumah b'rishos harabim. Check. You're fine. And the other person comes to the Rav and, again, goes through the same story. You're fine. Shneim b'vas achas. But if both come to the Rav at the same time, so now what's the Rav going to do? Well, I can't say that you're tahor because here's what I know. I know there's tumah on one of the paths. I know that you walked on one and you walked on the other. I don't know which one walked on which. I don't know which one the tumah is on, but collectively, I know somebody here is tameh, so bevas achas, temein. They're both going to be tameh. Rabbi Yossi, Omer, ben kach temein. Rabbi Yossi says, in either way, you're going to be tameh. Even if they come independently. Okay, now wait. Amar Rav Avitem, Rabbi Yochanan, bevas achas, divra al kol temein. The Gemara says, now quoting Rav, or some say it's quoting to Rav Yochanan, that look. Even though we just learned the machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Yossi, we're going to minimize that machlokas. Bivas achas divrei al kol tameim. Look, if they come at the same time, what's the Rav supposed to do? Meaning, we know that collectively one of them is tameh. So he has to come to a conclusion of tumah. Now, if they come one after another, in other words, and each one is only dealing with their halachic status, while each one's halachic status independently is safek. And again, safek tamei birusha rabim is tahor. So independently, there's not going to be any disagreement as well. The Rav is going to be able to declare each one of them to be tahor.
There is, because if the first one comes and it says tahor, then the second one has to be tahor.
Well, yes and no. Meaning that again, each one of them walked down the path. We don't know. We know that there's tumah on one of the paths. We don't know which one it is. So, for each one of them, it presents its own suffix. Ela bevali hisha'el alav achavero. The only point of disagreement between Rav Yossi and Rav Yehuda is the following. Where each one comes to the Rav by themselves, but asks the Shala not only on his own behalf, but on behalf of his friend as well. Meaning he explains to the Rav, here's the story. There's a two paths. There's Tumah on one of the two paths. I don't know which one it was on. I walked on one of the paths, and my Tumah and Tahor. But before answering that question, allow me to also share with you that my friend also walked down the other path, and now I'm asking. And he and I, by the way, after we walked down the path, we operated with some Taharos, and now we're asking. So in other words, I'm not only asking on myself, I'm asking also, I'm giving the Rav the full story. It was me, it was my friend, then we worked on Taharos afterwards. So Rabbi Yossi medamile labas achas, and Rabbi Yehuda medamile lezeh achar zeh. And so now the all machlokes between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is which side are we gonna push this to? Are we gonna push this to the side of each one asking individually, where the Rav has perfect right to be makel? Or are we going to push this to the side of where they're asking collectively, where the Rav over there has to be machmir? So if one is asking on behalf of him and his friend, so where are we going to be medame? What is this more comparable to? So the Gemara says, fine, that's the case of Shnei Shvilin. So now, translate that back to our question. Our question over here is where I have a rodent taking chametz, bringing into one of their houses, and again, we don't know which one it is, each one going to the Rav independently, the Rav can say, fine, the other house. If the two homeowners go to the Rav collectively, so then we have a problem because we know that there's chametz in one of their houses, and now that they're going collectively, so the Rav no longer has the right to be.
Isn't
that a reason? Yeah, the house is, right, it's the analogy. The analogy, the pastor is the Rishas Rabin, this is the Rishas Yachid, the case of the Tumah Tahara is Safik Tumah, this is a case of Safik Isser. Grant, I agree. Right, there seems to be a lot of built-in differences between the cases. But at least conceptually, they share a lot in common. Safik Al, Safik Lo Al. Okay, let's say like this. Rodin took the chametz, took it into his mouth, and now it started going to the house, but we don't know if he actually arrived in the house. So this is a question of Suffolk al, Suffolk lo al. So we don't even know if he got to his destination. Hainu Bika, this is the case of Bika, uvepulta de Rav Elazar v'Rabbanan, very similar to the machlokes between Rav Elazar and the Chachamim, and it goes like this. Did not. Hanichnas the Bika, if you go into a valley. V'yamosak shamim, if you go during the rainy season, v'tumah besad, and there's tumah in the field, v'tumah sab besad, v'plonis v'amar echad, halachti b'makum halaz v'eni odia, im nechnasti ba'oso sad v'im lo nechnasti. Here's my story. I don't even know if I went into the field. I'm not even sure if I went into the field. So Rav Elazar matar v'chachamim etamim. So Rav Elazar says, you're fine, and the chachamim say, you're tameh. Now, a couple things over here. Number one, rainy season, why do I care? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes, B'yamosek shamim, havi abika, rishos ha'yach l'tumah b'mnei shekvar, tzamech hazera, v'ein rishos l'chol adam l'kanes, l'vekai malan, safik tumah rishos ha'yach tzveko tami. The rainy season, no one traverses the valleys during the rainy season. There's growth in the valley. There's no traffic. There's no population. Therefore, it is a rishos ha'yach. So the only thing that we're accomplishing by just simply pointing out the rainy season is just simply there to identify that it is a rishos hayachid. Fine. So this is a case of safek tumah b'rishos hayachid. Now, what do we normally say by safek tumah b'rishos hayachid? Sfeko tameh. Well, the conclusion is that it's tameh. Remember, we learned this in the beginning of Sota. We will learn this in the beginning of Sota. All these halachas of Safik Tuma, Rishus Yachav versus Rishus Rabim, is all generated from the halachas of Sota. We know what's the story with the Sota. She was warned not to be with a man. Against the warning, she goes and she secludes herself with that man. We do not know what happened in that room. Was she mizana? Did she commit adultery? So the Torah says that, well, we don't know, but the Torah says that as long as she secluded herself with that man that she was warned against, she now has a status of being a sota, which even though we don't know what happens, the Torah says she's prohibited to her husband. That's safek tuma b'rishus sayachid. If, however, she did not seclude herself with a man, she was together with the man, but not alone, so that's safek tuma b'rishus sarabim and sveko tahor. All the halachas of Safek Tuma are generated from Sota. And the reason why is because by Sota, the Torah uses the words Tuma. Okay. Anyway. So here, what's the issue? If there was Tuma in the valley, and the person says, I went into the valley, and it was private, it was a private area, so why is there a machlokus between the Chachamim and Rav Elazar? So let's reread this again, let's read this carefully, because as we're going to see, it's not a simple Safek. Again, Amar Echad, Halachti b'makom alaz, I went into that general area, ve'ene yodeim nechnasi ba'osa sada ve'imlo. I don't even know if I went into that particular field, meaning it was known exactly where the Tuma was, and he knows he went into the general vicinity, but he does not know with absolute certitude that he even went into that particular field. So Rav Elazar says, Yotar and the Chachamim say Yotame. Shahaya Rav Elazar Omer, Safik Bia Tahor, Safik Maga Tuma Tame. Look, if the question is, I knew exactly where it was, and I wasn't sure if I touched it or if I didn't touch it, that's what's called a classic Safik. Safik Tuma, Bersha Siach is going to be Tame. But if I don't even know if I went in, so that's a further removed Safik. We can call that, well, we don't have to call it anything. If you take a look at the top Tosfos says Safik Bia Tahor, fourth Tosfos on the Amud, Perish Ri, Debisfake Sfeka Pligi. Over here it's a double Safik, meaning because he doesn't even know, first of all, he doesn't even know if he came into contact with a Tuma. But further removed than that, he doesn't even know if he went into the field with the Tuma. So categorically, Tosfos says this falls under the category of Sfake Sfeka. It may not be the classic Sfake Sfeka that we normally see in the world of Sfeik Sfeika, but Tosfos says that's how we can categorize it. Rabbi Natam also says the same thing as well. Tosfos quotes, interesting by the way, look a little bit further in this Tosfos. Vinira Lari, there are four lines down in this Tosfos, fourth Tosfos on the Amud. The time of the Rabbi Eliezer, the Mitar b'Sfeik Sfeika, Mishim Delo Garmina Misota, Latami b'Rishos Yachid, Ela Sfeika Achas Kisota. Look, what's behind Rabbi Eliezer? There is this principle that if I have a doubt of Safik, a doubt of Tuma in a private area, so what do we say? Sfeik, Safik, Tuma, Berushos, Yachid, Tame. Why? So as I explained a moment ago, and Tosfos reviews with us, it's prototyped after the Sota model. What's the Sota model? The Sota model is where he and her were in a room together, but we do not know what happens. That's one Safek. Again, I know you can look at this so many different ways. But that's one Safek. Aval Trace Feka. But once the Safek has been reduced, once it's a double Safek, low. There it's no longer modeling itself after the Sota model. And so explains Tosfos, Rabbi Eliezer says, therefore the conclusion is not Tame, but rather it's fine. V'rabban and Savre, and here, what's the Chachamim's counter-argument? Kaven de mina dina filu b'sfeiko achas hayela taher de ukme aches kas tahara. Very interesting. The Chachamim say like this. Look, if I ask you the following question. The man and the woman went into a room alone. Now, I understand Yetzahara and we understand temptation. But they went into a room alone. And what was her presumed status prior to going into the room? She's a chazaka of being ksheira. Now, because of a suffix, what does the Torah say? She now has the status of Sota. In other words, what's happening is that a suffix is changing her status. We don't have to remember that far back. We go back to yesterday's daf. Ein suffix motzi midei vadai. Generally speaking, we have a rule that if I have a vadai, and a chazak, we learned this yesterday, A chazaka is a vadai. If I have a vadai, a suffik cannot change the status of a vadai. So if I just went with that thought process, I would have said the sota should be fine. And yet the Torah says that because she secluded herself in a room, that suffik is going to overturn her chazaka. Tosos therefore argues that if that's true by one suffik, that's also going to be true by a double suffik as well. Because we already see that basically what happens is that sota upsets the general principles of suffik versus chazaka. The general principle is that suffik will not overturn a chazaka. By sota we see it does. Tosfos argues on behalf of the chachamim, so will a sfeik sfeika. Right? The ukma cheskas tarva filo hachitame hu adin afilo betrei sfeika. So even if it's a double suffix, it's still going to upset and overturn the general presumed status. Okay?
They don't hold a sfeik sfeik in shas at
all. No, don't say that. In other words, say they do hold the sfeik sfeik in general, but when it comes to suffix tumah, so just like we see that one suffix overturns a chazaka, so a double suffix also is going to overturn a chazaka in the world of tumah. Translatable to other areas of shas? I don't know. I'm not sure. But that's very interesting way to look at it.
In the Sota case, it's not that she becomes tummy. They make a drink.
No, but yes, but she has status. Meaning she's usher to her husband. She cannot be with her husband once she has Sota status.
You're not going to put her to death.
It's not, in other words, it's a love, but it's a love. She's usher to her husband. It's a status. Okay. I'm sorry, I just totally lost my place. I'm back. To be a Torah Safik Magatam Tame. Okay. Al Uvadak Velo Ashkach. Okay. Moving on to the next question of the Gemara. Next question of the Gemara, we're in the middle of Yud Amud Aleph. We're up to the next case. Rodin went in. Rodin had a piece of chametz in his mouth. Rodin went into the house. I saw all that happen. And I did a bedika. I couldn't find the chametz. Now what? So, al badak v'lo ashkach. Plukta de ramer v'rabbanan. So the Gemara says, for that, we have another machlokus. Did nan haya ramer omer kol davar shebecheskas tumah la'olam hu betumah so achiv ad alcha hatumah. Heichan hi. Ramer is of the position now. We would all guess correctly that this is Rav Meir. I mean, this really is Rav Meir. Choshesh lemiyuta. Rav Meir says, look, if I know that there was Tumah, now here in the Tumah in this context is regarding a kever, meaning I know that there was a kever somewhere in this field. I checked the entire field. I couldn't find it. Rav Meir will say, check again. It's there. You just didn't find it. In fact, once I know that there was a kever once there, the presumptive state, the chazaka, that this field is tameh, remains intact until you find the actual kever. And the chachamim say, no, you did a bedika, good. You checked the land, good. Once you get to virgin soil, meaning it's clear that there was no, you dug to the point where this land has been totally unaffected, not touched, not manipulated. So once you do a bedika, that clears the air. What happened to the kever? I don't know. But we did a bedika, so everything is fine. So here too as well. If I saw the rodent take the chametz into the house, and I did a bedika, Rav Meir will tell you, look again. It's got to be there. So keep looking until you find it. And the chachamim say, no, you did a bedika afterwards, you're fine. What happened to the chametz? The rodent took it out. Al ubadak va'ashkach. Okay, next case. You saw the rodent take the chametz into the house. You carefully try to follow the rodent into the house. Okay? You didn't see the rodent. You did a bedika in the house. You did find the chametz. You got rid of the chametz. Story over, right? Maybe. Plukta de Rebbe v'Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, de Tanya. Sada sheneva bo kever. Hanichnas usocho tamei. The Brisa deals with the following case. I have a field, there was a kever, there was a burial, a body was buried somewhere in the field. So you go into the field, so you're going to be tummy. Nimsa gaba kever, hanichnas usocha tahor. Now, let's say you do a little bit of search and you discover a body. You don't know if the body you discovered is the one that was buried over there, but in other words, one body lost, one body found, day's over. You're good. So hanichlas lesocha tahor. So if you go into that field, you're going to be tahor. Sheani omer kevesh avadu kevesh nimsa divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says, let's look at our count. We lost a body in the field. We found a body in the field. We're good. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel omer tibadek kol hasadeh kula. And Shimon Gamliel says, no, check again. Why? Because there is a real possibility that the body that I found was not the body that I lost. And it could very well be that the body that was lost is still out there somewhere, and so therefore there's a need to check again. So too here in our case, if the mouse goes into the house with chametz, I walk into the house, I don't even necessarily do a bedika, but I find the chametz, so now, can I breathe easy? So again, the machlokes between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. Rebbe will say, look at the count. Chametz went in, I found chametz, you're fine. Rebbe Shimon Gamliel says, no, check the whole house again. Hiniach tesu matzah yud. I leave 9 loaves of bread overnight. Again, this is not related to the oh, between Rebbe and Shimon Gamliel? Be honest, I don't know. Okay. I don't know. Hiniach tesu matzah yud. Next question of the Gemara. I leave nine loaves of bread, and next morning I find 10. Okay? So, on most other occasions, that's called a windfall. Problem now is, where did it come from? So, and again, by the way, this has nothing to do with our minhag of leaving out bread for the bedika. This is just simply, in other words, again, I want to leave breakfast over for tomorrow morning, but I know I left 9, and here I am now, next morning, 10. Plukta de Rebbe v'Rabbanan. This is another machlokas. Ditanya. We learned in a Mishnah. It's a Braisa. More accurately, it's a Tosefta. Hiniach mana omatza masayim. Chulan omaiser sheni maravin zebezeh. I have a little money chest in my house. And what do? I normally keep monies of maiser sheni. Maiser sheni money, which eventually when I go up to Yerushalayim, I'm going to take the money with me and I'm going to buy with this money food, eat the food in Yerushalayim as per the mitzvah of maiser sheni. Maaser Sheni is not allowed to be spent on food outside of Yerushalayim, not allowed to be eaten outside of Yerushalayim. Very good. As Kedusha. And Hiniach Mana, so what happened is that in this money, I know, I kept good accounting, I had 100 coins in there, and then, next morning, I find 200. Okay? Chulin u'maaser Sheni muravim zebezeh divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe will tell you that the 100 Maaser Sheni that was there is still there. The additional 100, somebody threw chulin in there. And now I have monies that are mixed together. Chulin and maaser sheni monies that are mixed together. V'chachamim amar memako chulin. The chachamim say you're fine. Why are you fine? Because the best explanation I will have over here is the following. You didn't add another 100 coins. You took out the 100 maaser sheni coins and you replaced it with 200 chulin coins. That's what happened. That's what transpired. The Gemara assumes that machlokus is going to be the same machlokus over here. Meaning, I left 9 loaves of bread overnight, and next morning I have 10. So is that 10th just an additional loaf? Or no, were these 9 taken away, and these 10 now represent 10 new loaves? So that, the Gemara says, that's the machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. Now we're going to go the other way. I started by leaving off 10 loaves, and then next morning I only find 9. Hainu seifa d'tanya. That's the next case of this braisa. Hiniach masayim u'matzah mana, where in my little maaser sheni pushka, I started by leaving off 200 coins of maaser sheni, and the next morning I find 100. So, masayim u'matzah mana, mana munach, umana mutal divrei Rebbe. So Rebbe will tell you, look, it was 200 coins of maaser sheni money. Next morning I only find 100. Must be that somebody took 100 maaser sheni coins and left the remaining 100 maaser sheni coins. V'chachamim amar makol chulin. And the chachamim say no. In other words, if some of it was taken, all of it was taken. So, and what was replaced with is with chulin. Same thing over here. Is that if I started with 10 and I end up with 9 the next morning, so again, according to Rebbe, somebody just took one of the loaves away. According to the Chachamim, someone took all 10 loaves away and replaced it with 9. So in other words, that's 10 loaves that are now unaccounted for. Top of Yud Amud Beis. Hiniach bezavitzu umatze bezavitz acheres. Okay, just again, we're getting hit today with a barrage of suffix, all different types of sveikos. Last night I put the chametz in that corner. This morning I woke up, I found the chametz in the house, but no longer in that corner, but rather in that corner. Plukta de Rav Shimon Gamliel v'Rabbanan, this is another machlokus tanaim, the Tanya. Kardim shava babayas, habayas tamei, shani omer adam tamei nichnas v'sham v'natlo. Let's say I had an axe in the house, and I wake up the next morning and I don't know where the axe is. In fact, it's taken. Somebody took it. So, what an interesting leap of assumption. According to the Tanna Kamma, not only do I assume it was taken, but I assume that the person who take it, the perpetrator, is also Tame. Talk about really assigning a labeling a perpetrator, right? This is certainly discrimination, but in the halachic sense, meaning that I know that not only was it taken, but the person who took it was Tame. So Habay is Tame Shani Omer Adam Tame Nechtas L'Sham. By the way, when it says that the house is Tame, of course, what it means is not the house being Tame, but the contents of the house are Tame, because this guy who took my axe was rummaging through my house, handling and touching all the utensils in my house. So Adon Nechtas L'Sham Menatlo. Shimon Gamliel Omer Habay is Tahor Shani Omer Hishilo La'ach V'Shachach. Oh, shenat le mizavizu v'inich mizavizar cheres v'shachach. The Gemara says, well, either look. First of all, just because the axe is missing out of the house, that doesn't mean someone came in and took it. It could very well be that I myself misplaced it. Possible. And then the Bryce ends off by saying, and the same thing would be true from one corner to another. Now, Zavis man dekashme. Where did that come up in the discussion? Chesur mechzor v'achi katani. So the Gemara says part of this price is missing, and let's fill in the missing pieces. Kardim sha'ava babayis habayis tamei shani omer adam tamei nichnas l'sham ve'not lo. Oh, she'inich bezavizuv matzah bezavis acheres habayis tamei shani omer adam tamei nichnas l'sham ve'not lo mezavizaviz ve'inich bezavis acheres. Not a whole lot has changed in our chesur mechzora, in our new addition to the Braisa. We're just basically pointing out, once the axe moves, and I don't have an explanation of why it moved, either it was taken or it was moved from one corner to another, I'm gonna fall back to the assumption the person who moved it was Tame, and he moved it from either out of the house or from one corner to another. And furthermore, I'm also going to assume that he went in and he touched all of my other utensils in the house. The axe will not. The person who's touching the axe is Tame. Why do we assume that he's Tame? I'm not sure. In other words, that's a lot of assuming. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Habayis Tahor Shani Omer Yishilo Acher V'Shachach Oshanan Lemizavizu V'Nich Bezavizu V'Shachach. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, you don't have to make all those assumptions. It's very possible. It's reasonable to say that either you're the one who misplaced it or you're the one who picked it up and moved it from one corner to another. So now let's translate that back to the case of chametz. So the conclusion is going to be it's the same machlokas, meaning chametz was starting in one corner of the house. Next morning I woke up, it was in the other corner of the house. So if you're the chachamim, you're going to assume the worst. You're going to assume somebody came in, took the chametz from over here. What about that other chametz over there? Different chametz, and so therefore you're going to have to do bedik all over again. Whereas again, according to the chacham, according to Shimon Gamliel, sorry, it could very well be that sometime over the course of the night, you're the one who picked up the chametz and moved it from one corner to another corner. Again, before we're going to stop over here. I know there's more to go, but we're out of time. Again, by the way, just you really have to think this through. And I know Danny attempted to address this earlier this morning. Meaning, in all these cases, we're talking about bedik. We're talking about bedikas chametz. Bedikas chametz is a din derabanan. So in all these cases, meaning yes, I understand suffik, but a suffik on a din daraisa. Right, that we overall understand, but over here it's really a suffix on whether or not a bedika needs to be performed again, which is a din derabanan. So somehow you're going to have to explain why it is that the chachamim were machmir on these types of sveikos, even though the conclusion, the result is going to be that I'm going to have to do a bedika on a. I'm going to have to repeat a din derabanan. So again, today we covered for the most of Daf Yud. And most of Daf Yud is dedicated to the question of Suffolk. The principles of Kavua, the principles of called the Parsh Meruba Kaparish, the principle of the Shnei Shvilin, the principle of Oh my gosh, so many principles. The principle of tumah that was lost, and it was found. Can I say it was the same tumah that I lost? Okay, a number of principles today in the world of Suffolk. We touched on today the case of Sveika as well. Okay, and in all these cases, the Gemara reflects that whatever the machlokas is going to be regarding the general principle of Suffolk was going to be the rule regarding whether or not I have to do bedikas chametz again.